Welcome to the Israel Daily News Podcast. I'm your host, Shanna Fold, and I'm here to get you caught up quickly. I've got some top news stories for you today from Israel, and guess what? You're listening, so you're already on top of your game. Survive and thrive, people. Knowledge is the best weapon. Today is Monday, June 15th, 2026. Of the Gregorian calendar and the 30th of Sivan 5786 in the Hebrew calendar. After the news updates at the top, we have a few words from our political analyst Binyamin Moalem about the new deal between the U.S. and Iran and what it could mean for Israel if it gets signed in ink on Friday. Now, let's get to the news. Early Monday morning, so that's today, the U.S. and Iranian officials announced that they have agreed on a peace framework to end the war. Now, the precise terms of this deal, which is set to be signed in Geneva, Switzerland, on Friday, are not fully known. However, the agreement is expected to reopen the Strait of Hormuz, a key pathway for global oil supply that has been blocked for more than 2 months. Iranians report that the deal also includes the release of $12 billion of frozen assets, plus a pledge by the United States not to interfere in Iran's internal affairs. But that is just a report from Iranian state media, and most of the media in Iran is state-backed. However, a senior Iranian official said the draft deal would allow Iran to dilute that uranium inside Iran. Israel has not officially commented on the deal. However, Israeli officials are concerned about this framework, which doesn't complete the desired goals of the war. A big one of them is making sure that Iran does not end up with nuclear power, which they're working toward aggressively. Iran says its nuclear program is meant for peaceful purposes, but international watchdogs report the country has amassed roughly 440 kilograms of uranium enriched to 60% purity, just below weapons-grade levels and far beyond typical civilian needs. Officials believe much of the stockpile remains stored in underground facilities and may have survived U.S. strikes on Iran's nuclear infrastructure in June 2025. So that's a year ago. If you remember, there was some major fighting between Iran and Israel in June 2025. That's when my apartment got blown up by an Iranian missile while I was inside of it. That happened on June 16th of 2025. So tomorrow is going to be the 1 year, let's call it a commemoration of that. Israel's defense minister, Israel Katz, announced that the IDF will not withdraw from southern Lebanon despite the announcement of a peace deal between the United States and Iran. The IDF will remain in security zones, strips of territory Israel is militarily occupying in Lebanon, Syria, and in Gaza. In his statement Sunday night, the first from an Israeli official since the announcement of the peace deal, Katz stated that, quote, "We oppose an IDF withdrawal from Lebanon despite all the existing pressures and those that will still come." According to Pakistani Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif, the U.S.-Iran peace deal allegedly includes the conclusion of any fighting against Hezbollah, which is at Israel's northern border, a terror group at Israel's northern border. However, Katz warned that, quote, "If Iran attacks Israel because of events in Lebanon, we will strike it with full force." Israel's actions in southern Lebanon will prove integral to the durability of the ceasefire between the U.S. and Iran, so we'll have to see what happens there. And if you're a little fuzzy on why Lebanon and Hezbollah are very crucial elements in this ceasefire brokered between Israel and the U.S., stay tuned for our political analyst who will explain that for you. The IDF killed senior Hezbollah commander Ali Moussa Dakhdouk in a strike that took place in southern Lebanon this past weekend. And the reports are now out about it. Dakhdouk, who joined Hezbollah in 1983, held a variety of positions within the terror organization, notably serving as security general for Supreme Leader Hassan Nasrallah, who was assassinated by Israel, which is a huge, big deal. He was leading the way spiritually, militarily for Hezbollah. Dakhdouk was also the founder of the Golan Terrorist Network, a unit dedicated to attacking infrastructure near Israel. He also managed Hezbollah's operations in Syria, another northern border of Israel. In 2007, Dakhdouk was imprisoned for the kidnap and murder of five American soldiers in Iraq, but was released by Iraq in 2012 following the U.S. withdrawal from Iraq at that time. Dakhdouk was responsible for coordinating many of Hezbollah's attacks on both IDF soldiers and the state of Israel at large. Dakhdouk's killing marks the death of one of Hezbollah's most experienced and dangerous operatives who's been in the game for decades. Let's turn to some analysis on the New Deal, which is just a memorandum of understanding at this point, with our political analyst, Binyamin Moalem. Moalem is deeply engaged in Israeli current events and policy discussions. Having worked as a foreign law clerk at the Supreme Court of Israel, he has a unique vantage point on Israeli jurisprudence. Binyamin devotes much of his time to curating and explaining current events and politics in Israel on his popular Instagram page, By Moalem, where he provides balanced news coverage from an Israeli perspective. Let's bring him in. Welcome to the Israel Daily News, Binyamin Moalem. Thanks for joining us on this really historic day.
Thank you, Shana. Good to be back with you.
So I actually woke up this morning to a couple of different thoughts. One was, hey, I slept through the night. There was no, there were no Iranian missiles. I went to sleep understanding that Israel was bracing for an attack from Iran. I for sure thought that I'd be woken up within a short time frame and have to throw my shoes on and run down to the safe room down below the building, but that didn't happen. And then next, I saw some words from Israel Daily News listeners in the United States saying the United States has abandoned Israel. This news is crazy. This is just a setup for future hostilities from Iran. And I had to wake up and get processing. So the news here is that the U.S. says that they've reached a deal with Iran. And from my understanding, fighting has been paused because we didn't receive any rocket attacks, any missile attacks from Iran here in Israel, and I'm on the ground. So can you share with us what is the update here and what does this mean for Israel? Take us through this new deal that hasn't really been released yet, but that we know is underway.
Sure. So, yeah, as you said last night, many Israelis went to sleep thinking that there was going to be an imminent attack from Iran. This came after Israel attacked, killed a Hezbollah commander in Beirut. Iran had said that any attacks in Beirut would result in a reprisal attack from Iran, and they indeed were gearing up for such an attack. Now, this came as the U.S. and Iran were in the final steps towards an agreement. President Trump really, really wanted to sign it yesterday, perhaps because it was his birthday and he wanted to bring peace and do something like that along those lines on his birthday. Now, President Trump was very upset when he heard about the Israeli attack on Beirut. According to one report, he said that he said Netanyahu has no effing judgment because of that attack. He was very upset because the Hezbollah attack that preceded the Israeli attack on Beirut was were three drone attacks. Nobody was hurt, but from Israel's perspective, you know, tens of thousands of people are under the constant threat of attack by Hezbollah, rocket attack, drone attack. They're constantly running back and forth from shelters. And even if nobody is hurt or there's no damage, it still cannot be something that any country could allow for its citizens.
And let's pause. The intention of those drones, of those drone attacks, they were to do harm?
Yeah. Yeah. These aren't friendly drones. They're usually laden with explosives, and they're meant to explode upon contact with whatever it is that they hit. And many Israelis will recall last week that President Trump threatened a disproportionate response to Iranian attacks on U.S. bases in the Gulf. So, from Israel's perspective, this could be somewhat hypocritical. But then again, President Trump is seeing this, viewing this from a larger perspective, and he doesn't want Israel or Hezbollah to get in the way of a big deal that he sees as a great deal. Now, what happened later on, Iran indeed agreed to back down and not attack Israel. And of course, Israel did not attack Iran because they were not attacked to start with. And last night, Israel time, late last night, Israel and, sorry, the US and Iran did sign a memorandum of understanding. This is an interim deal. Here's what we know about this deal. The text of it has not been released. We are hearing reports from the U.S. We're hearing reports from Iran. Both sides trying to spin it in their favor. Now, what we do know is essentially this is a open the Strait of Hormuz in exchange for opening the Strait of Hormuz. The U.S. is going to open up its blockade and allow Iran now to export oil again, and Iran is not going to, according to the U.S., not going to charge tolls or block any ships that are traversing the strait from doing so. From Israel's perspective, that alone is not a good thing. Iran is getting something tangible, something concrete. It's getting economic relief. Its economy has been badly hurt by this, by the not just the blockade, but the war and the sanctions. And this will give much-needed funds for the Iranian regime to rehabilitate itself, to rebuild its military, which was decimated during the war. So that alone, and Iran doesn't have to make any concessions, concrete concessions at this point regarding its nuclear program. So Iran is, as far one Israeli official said, this is Iran is paying on credit, meaning, yeah, in the future we'll agree to some deal because this deal kicks off a 60-day period for nuclear negotiations, whereas the United States is paying with cash, meaning it's reopening the Strait of Hormuz. Now we get into the other reports that we have heard from about this deal. Now Iran is saying that, and Pakistan, which is the mediator, they're saying this includes a ceasefire in Lebanon. Which means that Israel, which is not a party to the deal, is now supposedly, according to those who signed it, is going to somehow bound by an agreement that they are not a party to, and when it affects directly affects its self-defense. Now, in Israel, you almost never have a situation where everybody agrees on something. There has been wall-to-wall criticism in Israel from Itamar Ben-Gvir all the way on the far right to Yair Golan, who is the leader of the left-wing Democrats Party, all criticizing this deal, and everybody in between. Again, the Prime Minister has been silent about it. He has diplomatic reasons for being silent about it, you know, with his relationship with President Trump and so on. But there were condemnations from Bezalel Smotrich in the coalition, Itamar Ben-Gvir in the coalition, who said that we are not bound by this deal. And then in the opposition, of course, Yair Lapid, Naftali Bennett, Avigdor Lieberman, Gadi Eisenkot, and Yair Golan all came out with statements against the deal. Now, the difference between those in the coalition who were condemning it and those in the opposition, those in the coalition said that, you know, they didn't blame Netanyahu for this. They said that nobody else would have been able to withstand the pressure that Netanyahu was under during the course of the war, during the course of the negotiation period, and he was managed to withstand it and get and do the best possible job he could for Israel, whereas on the opposition, they are blaming the prime minister for a diplomatic failure, what they say, and what is a really bad deal for Israel. Now, politics aside, I don't see a scenario which any other prime minister would have gotten any other result when it comes to President Trump. He was going to do what he was going to do. I don't think that there is anybody who could be leading, any leader of Israel would have been able to get the president to do something different in this situation. But again, we're coming to an election and both sides are going to play politics. When we get to the actual, the content of it, we can see why this is not good for Israel. Israel is now, you know, after really were significant military victories, and Yair Golan, left-wing leader of the Democrats Party, acknowledged as such in his statement. You know, many in Israel feel that they have at least one hand, if not two hands, tied behind their back when it comes to defending against Hezbollah, because now anytime it strikes Lebanon, it runs the risk of Iran either retaliating or worse, well, diplomatically speaking, the U.S. pressuring Israel not to retaliate, and therefore kind of handing Iran the victory, allowing Iran to tie the fate of Hezbollah, which is was a war that began way before anything happened with Iran. This was a war. Hezbollah attacked Israel on October 8th. Hezbollah then, after the ceasefire in November of 2024, Hezbollah attacked Israel the day after the war started in Iran on March 1st. So this is, as far as Israel is concerned, this is a war between us and Hezbollah. The U.S. has nothing to do with this. The U.S. had a war with Iran, and fine, they have the right to make a deal with them. Even, you know, we may not like it, but Lebanon should not be involved here. And it remains to be seen. Again, it's early. There was a report this morning of an Israeli strike in South Lebanon. We'll have to see. But there are also reports that pretty much the soldiers in South Lebanon who have not withdrawn, and our the defense minister said, as you pointed out, we are not going to withdraw. Whether, you know, how much can they, what is their level of activity? Meaning, can they continue operating? Will they continue trying to find, Hezbollah tunnels, Hezbollah weapon caches that are in South Lebanon? This all remains to be seen, and to what extent will Israel be subject to U.S. pressure not to conduct these activities because it does not want to jeopardize its ongoing negotiations with Iran? Because right now there is no final deal with Iran. There's only an interim deal. And we also wanted to talk about you know, what both sides are saying. Iran is saying that this is a deal that allows it to collect tolls in the Strait of Hormuz, something the U.S. rejects. Iran is saying that it gives them access to $12 billion of frozen assets right off the bat, something the U.S. rejects. Vice President Vance just said in an interview on ABC that it's an incentive-laden deal, meaning as Iran makes concessions and gives, it will then receive. Now, again, we don't know the terms. Those have not been released yet. Vance said that he believes the terms of the deal will be released later this week, so we'll have to wait and see what the actual terms are. But Iran is trying to spin this as a victory. Last night, an Iranian official, I believe it was a tweet, said that this is a great victory against the American and Zionist enemies. And as far as they're concerned, you know, there is no backing down from their ultimate goal of destroying Israel, and there is nothing that we know of that will rein in their funding of terror proxies in the region. Because again, as Iran gets money, that money is going to go towards its military, it's going to go towards its terror proxies, Hezbollah being the chief of them, the Houthis and so on. And this was one of the big issues that Israel had with the JCPOA in 2015, not just that the Israelis believed that this did not adequately limit Iran's nuclear program, but it also opened up a lot of money for Iran to tap into, and it could then use that money to fund terror proxies, which then use that money against Israel.
So a few questions are coming up for me right now. First of all, for the listeners who are not familiar and are not briefed on the connection between Lebanon and Iran and why these two countries are so intricately dealing with one another, especially as it comes to this memorandum of understanding that we have on our hands, could you please just give a quick historic explainer for those that are not familiar? And I have two other questions. One is those $12 million worth of funds. Can you give us a little bit of detail on what those funds are? Where did that money come from? They were frozen, obviously, and the idea is a lot of people have said that it's important to understand that the U.S. is not giving a payment to Iran, but that their assets and money had been frozen and not accessible. So if you could explain what that means. And my last question is about the people of Iran. U.S. President Trump, just about a year ago, said that the people of Iran should hold tight and that the U.S. was coming to save them.
Less than a year ago, 5 months ago.
That was only 5 months ago. Well, we're coming up tomorrow, actually, on the 1 year anniversary of my apartment being bombed by Iran. So I'm actually in an energy of, oh my goodness, I cannot believe that we've been 1 year out since that attack, those attacks, the June 2025 attacks from Iran. So I don't know what I'm going to do to celebrate tomorrow, but we're 1 year away from that Iranian missile attack on my home, which I was inside of when the attack happened. And it is it's a miracle that I'm alive. So take us through to question one, please.
All right. So regarding Hezbollah is Iran's main terror proxy. Until that war a year ago, Iran had already fired some missiles a year prior to that. But until this most recent Middle East war, let's say until 2023, Iran had kind of had this policy of we have clean hands. We don't, you know, yes, Israel's our enemy. We want to destroy Israel, but we're not going to get our hands dirty. We're going to let everybody else do it, the dirty work for us. We'll fund Hamas. We'll fund Hezbollah. We'll fund the Houthis. Now, the Houthis were fighting a 10-year war with the Yemeni government that ended several years ago. And then also a bunch of terror proxies in Iraq because Iraq is a big mess and they want the Shiite militias there to be in charge as opposed to the Sunnis. And they also controlled Syria essentially through Bashar Assad. Now, since the October 7th war began, that huge net of terror proxies that they had created began to collapse. And Hamas had been, you know, Hamas is not destroyed, but Hamas is significantly weaker than it was. Hezbollah, which was the crown jewel of Iran's terror proxies, they had a military more powerful than many European countries. They have been largely, they have been weakened significantly, let's say. Their entire leadership has been killed. It is now being reported that their military is being run by the IRGC because they have nobody that are qualified really to run the military that they have. Much of their missile arsenal has been destroyed. They've been pushed back. And also within Lebanon itself, they have lost their stature, and many in Lebanon are calling for them to be thrown out. So now instead of the situation where Hezbollah is defending Iran, so to speak, Iranian interests in the region, we've got Iran coming to their defense by forcing the U.S., if indeed that is the case. But we did see, you know, throughout this time that they've kind of been trying to force the U.S. hand to limit Israel because they're saying, we're going to come to protect Hezbollah, our proxy, we're going to come to protect Lebanon, because all these years Hezbollah has called itself the protector of Lebanon. But now that the Lebanese people are turning on Hezbollah, Iran wants to say, like, no, we're going to protect you guys. We're going to attack Israel if they attack you. So the roles have kind of reversed there, and like Iran now has to get their hands dirty. Bashar Assad is gone, and the new regime in Syria is anti-Iran because they're Sunni. So Iran has had a lot of a role reversal. Its terror proxies have been weakened, and you know, they have been digging in and playing a very strong negotiating game. But at the end of the day, they did suffer a lot of losses on the military front. But the concern in Israel now is, well, will this money now allow them to rebuild it, however long it takes? You asked about the money. So, yeah, Iran, like many countries, they've got money all over the world. And again, I don't know which funds particularly they're referring to. Again, these are Iranian reports saying that they're going to get this money. The U.S. has not confirmed that. The only thing the U.S. has said is that Iran doesn't get anything unless it gives something. But there was actually supposed to be a release of several billion dollars of frozen Iranian assets after a prisoner exchange deal in September of 2023 that was negotiated between the Biden administration and the Iranian government. U.S. citizens who were incarcerated in Iran were released in exchange for other prisoners. And part of that deal was that the U.S. would release some frozen funds. Now, shortly thereafter, the October 7th attack happened before the funds could be released, and then the U.S. refroze the funds. And one of the things that Iran was reportedly trying to negotiate here was to get the funds that the Biden administration had originally agreed to release, to get those funds released now as part of this deal. Again, we don't know if this is actually going to happen or
how much. Do you know who froze the funds? Which power has the authority to freeze
the Biden administration. The Biden administration. Sorry, originally? I mean, there have been sanctions on Iran for a very long time. But now, many of the sanctions were alleviated in the 2015 by the Obama administration, but then President Trump in his first term re-implemented a lot of these sanctions because he withdrew from the Iran deal. And then President Biden had agreed to release some funds in that prisoner exchange deal, but then refroze those funds because after the October 7th attack and conducted by Hamas, which is funded by Iran. So that was a retaliatory measure against Iran in that situation. Now, again, we don't know whether that's going to be unfrozen because we do not know the exact terms of this deal right now. Iran is saying that, yeah, we're going to get this money. We're going to get $12 billion. And they're saying that this is part of a bigger $24 billion package that they're going to get the second half at a later date. So that's where that money comes from. And please remind me your third question again.
About the Iranian people.
Yeah. So again, the Iranian people, at the end of the day, President Trump would tell you, I'm guessing, yes, it's maybe not great for the Iranian people, but President Trump's duty is to the American people and to have a safer America. And that means, as far as President Trump's concerned, to not have a nuclear-powered regime in Iran. And if that means coming short of regime change in Iran. President Trump has said that there has been regime change in Iran. And I mean, there is a different leader in Iran right now, but that doesn't mean that the regime has actually changed. I mean, if anything, you know, instead of the centrality of power being in the hands of the supreme leader, the centrality of power may be arguably right now in the hands of the IRGC, which was meant to defend the or protect the supreme leader. Whatever the case, this is not the change that the Iranian people, at least those opposed to the regime, were hoping for. There actually was a protest in Iran yesterday, and it wasn't a protest against, it was a protest against the deal, but not because people were opposed to the regime. It was because they believed that Iran was making too many concessions, and they were opposed to the concessions being made by Mohammad Khalibaf, who is the Speaker of Parliament and the chief negotiator. They were protesting against Abbas Araghchi, who is the foreign minister of Iran. So there was a protest in Iran, but it was a protest from, you could call it, the Iranian extreme right, which said this doesn't go far enough and we're making too many concessions to the Americans. And they don't want to do that, meaning they don't want to make any concessions for the nuclear program or whatever. So that you have.
Thank you so much, Binyamin Mualim. Is there anything else that we need to know as we inch toward Friday to hopefully find out the official details of this deal?
Stay tuned. As soon as we find out more about what actually is in this deal, I'll be covering it on my Instagram page. For those who aren't following, can follow certainly, and I'll hopefully keep everything updated there. I've discussed everything that we know until this point, at least in brevity. And hopefully we'll find out more in the coming days.
Thank you, Binyamin.
Thank you, Shanna. Good to see you.
Good to see you. I want to go back in and add a note about the frozen funds. Iran has tens of billions of dollars in oil revenue frozen in foreign bank accounts around the world. The funds became inaccessible after the United States and its allies imposed sanctions on Tehran, preventing banks in countries including China, Iraq, India, South Korea, Japan, and Qatar from transferring the money back to Iran after the United States led that effort to sanction and freeze. In simple terms, Iran earned billions of dollars by selling oil to countries like South Korea, Iraq, China, India, Japan. However, because of U.S. sanctions tied to Iran's nuclear program and support for their militant groups like Hezbollah, like Hamas, like the Houthis, those countries could not legally transfer much of that money back to Iran. So the funds remained frozen in foreign bank accounts, and they're basically frozen in the world, not just by the United States, but by all of the countries that had so much to lose by not being able to do business with the United States that they complied in not sending those funds to Iran. So that's how the frozen money works. A lot of people think that the funds that Iran is negotiating for are just money from the United States, but it's actually this transfer of cash for the oil as the good. So just wanted to explain that there. The Israel Daily News now has its own direct donation platform after losing dozens of supporters last year during Spotify's takeover of our distribution site. Listeners can now contribute monthly or make one-time donations directly through our site. Support helps keep our independent journalism alive and growing, and you can follow Israel Daily News across our social media platforms on Instagram, TikTok, X, and LinkedIn at IsraelDaily.news or Israel Podcast on X. Now let's focus on something a little lighter. Sports. With the Knicks capturing their first NBA championship in more than 50 years, basketball is in a major upswing. Israel's basketball postseason is now set to deliver one of the most anticipated finals in recent memory, with crosstown rivals Maccabi Tel Aviv and Hapoel Tel Aviv both sweeping their respective semifinal opponents to set up a best-of-five derby championship beginning Tuesday in Yad Eliyahu. Maccabi took care of Hapoel Chulon in a firm fashion in Game 3, ultimately beating them by 27 points. Meanwhile, Hapoel Tel Aviv outlasted Hapoel Jerusalem 89-81. Maccabi coach Oded Katash praised his players' improvement throughout the series, but flagged crucial injury concerns heading into the finals, confirming that Gur Lavie and ex-NBA player TJ Leaf will miss the championship, while Tamir Blatt is expected to return at some point. On the other side of the coin, Hapoel Tel Aviv's coach Demetrius Itoudis was blunt about why he says his team has made it this far. He says, quote, "We won the battle on the boards, controlled the 50-50 balls, and limited their transition game. Ultimately, we wanted it more." End quote. The two clubs have already met four times this season, with Hapoel Tel Aviv winning three of the contests. But with the championship now on the line, all of that is out the window. Whether you're an Israeli in the United States or a New Yorker in the Holy Land, now is a high point for ball. We'll share the voice of the people on our platform about the big Knicks win with some excited Israeli voices in our next podcast. We're looking for people who joined viewings and people who were New Yorkers that are here. So we've got our interns out on the town looking for those voices. And I think we're going to have some fun media for you in our next show. All right. Well, that is it for today's show. Today is Monday, June 15th, 2026. Tel Aviv has a low of 24 degrees Celsius and a high of 27 degrees. That's 75 degrees Fahrenheit for the low, going up to 80 degrees for the high. We are everywhere. Don't forget to sign up to our Israel Weekly News Wrap. The Israel Weekly News Wrap is a newsletter with the top five stories coming out of Israel from throughout the week. And of course, with a personal note from me at the top. You can sign up for that at israeldailynews.org. Scroll down to the bottom and drop your email address in. Big thank you goes out to our incredible sponsor, Marianne Vollinger, our writer, Perry Schwartz, and our associate producer, Lori May, as well as our new interns. Have a great and productive day and an excellent week. Shavua Tov, everyone.